Masechet Baba Mesiah Daf He. We saw in the previous daf that Rabbi Chiya gave two chidushim. The first one is, while we all know that modeh b'miksat, the Torah requires that person to make an oath, right? If he admits, yes, I owe you 50, but I don't owe you the other 50, then he has to make an oath that he doesn't owe the other 50. Everyone agrees to that. Rabbi Chiya adds that actually also, if two witnesses come and say he owes 50, he also has to make an oath regarding the other 50. So two witnesses also trigger an oath. That was Rabbi Chiya's first law. His second law is that if you have a modeh b'miksat, and at the same time that he says, yes, I owe you 50, he actually gives the money immediately, and he denies the other 50. Nevertheless, he still has to make an oath. This disagrees with Rav Sheshat, who says that once you say helach, and you say, here's the money right back, right here, it's in your hands, so then we take that off the table. It's as if that money was never loaned in the first place, right? You gave it this money, here I give it back, that, forget that money altogether, and now I am contesting the entire amount. Right, even though the claim was for 100, and I say, I 50 I owe you, but here it is, so forget about that. And now I deny the entire 50, therefore I don't have to make an oath. That was Rav Sheshat. But Rabbi Chiya says, no, we don't think of it that way. Since the claim was 100, even if you pay right away and the money's right there in the original envelope that the guy gave you, and says, I'm giving it right back, I never used it, right? Here it is. Nevertheless, it's still called a partial admission because it's only part of what the claim is when the claimant came in. All right, that was Rabbi Chiya's two chidushim, and Rav Sheshat disagrees with the second one. Today we're going to see a challenge to Rav Sheshat from a pasuk regarding land, another second challenge to Rav Sheshat from a case of a watchman, and then a challenge to the first law of Rabbi Chiya from an explicit braita that seems to be against him, and then we're going to see a story about a shepherd that involves Rabbi Chiya's first law, and after that we'll go back to our Mishnah and continue the discussing the next parts of our Mishnah. So here we go. Ulman damad helach patur, according to Rav Sheshat, who says a case of helach, since you're giving the money right away, we don't consider it, and therefore it's not modeh b'miksat, it's kofer bakol, and he doesn't have to make a vow. We ask, amai istirich kira lemaute karka mishivua, ha kol karka helachu. Well, then why do we need a pasuk to exclude land from such a vow? After all, any case of land that involves land is going to be helach, because land is always there. It's not like money there. I take the money, I spend it, where is it? Helach is always right there in front of you. So as long as I say, yeah, that's your land, so it's the same as putting it right into your hand. It's just there, and you can go and take it. Since all cases of karka are helach, if you say, if as Rav Sheshat does, that helach is patur, then you would never have to say modeh b'miksat regarding land. And yet there is a pasuk that specifically excludes land. What is this pasuk that we're talking about? It's this pasuk here that says regarding all manners of trespass and all these items. Kol avedah shed yomar ki huzeh. This pasuk that the rabbis learn, ki huzeh means, I admit to part of it. Yes, this part. Ki huzeh, this part, you're right. I have to give it to you. But the other part, I deny. And if you do that, all right, ad ha Elohim yavor devash nehem, then he has to make a vow. Okay, so that's the application. It's not the simple reading here in the context, but that's the application that the rabbis make, that modeh b'miksat. And what you notice is that all the items listed here are movable items, not land. So why do we need this pasuk to say that the law of the vow of modeh b'miksat applies only regarding movable items and not land, right? You don't need this pasuk because land is always helach, and helach is always patur anyway. Rav Sheshat has two answers. Amar lach istirich kera hecha dechafar ba borot shichinu me'arot. No, I still need that pasuk to teach me a case where I got this land and then I dug pits and ditches and caves. I ruined the land. I made it a big mess. And then you say, oh, you owe me the land back. And then I come and I deny part of it. So I cannot come and say helach, right? Oh, here's the land, because I changed the land so sufficiently and messed it up so sufficiently that it's not helach anymore. So in fact, not every case of land is helach, because if I really mess it up, then it's not considered the same land, right? And you could say, that's not the land that I gave you. I'm not accepting that back. And so therefore the pasuk has to teach that even in that case there is no even in this case there is no vow, because the vow of mokseb modeve miksat does not apply to land. So I need the pasuk, because not this case is, although it's land, is not helach, so I need the pasuk to say no vow. Ina mehecha dit ano kelim vekarkaot v'oda bekelim vekafar bekarkaot. Or I would need the pasuk in another case where the claimant says, you owe me these movable items and land, and then the defendant says, you're right, I owe you vessels, but I don't owe you land. So here there's no helach, because he's not giving over the land. He's actually saying he's denying the land. Since there's no helach here, without the pasuk, I would have thought that you do have to make a vow in such a case, and therefore I need the pasuk to say, no, the whole vow of modeh b'miksat applies only to vessels. It has to be a denial and admission to within the vessels. But if the denial is all land, or if the admission is all land, well then here, I'm taking that helach. But if the denial is all land, then there's no helach. He's not giving anything over, and yet I need the pasuk to tell me that also there's no vow even in this case. Good. So Rav Sheshet answered that. Second question to Rav Sheshet, Tashema, Detane Rami Bar Hama, Arba'a Shomerin Tzirichin Kefira B'Miksat V'Hod'a B'Miksat, Shomer Chinam V'Hashoel Nose Sachar V'Hasocher, Hechi Dame Lav Damar Le Helach. Rami Bar Hama has a chidush, and he says that for Shomerim, have to make a vow if they deny part and admit to part. So usually most everybody else thinks that modeh b'miksat applies to a loan, right? Or you gave me money and now I deny that I owe you something or some a monetary obligation. Rami Bar Chama's chidush is, you know what? This also applies to shomrim. If you give me some items to watch and then I deny some of them and I admit to some of them and I want to get off the hook regarding a being a shomer, now different shomrim can be off the hook for different reasons. Let's focus just on shomer chinam. Shomer chinam has the least responsibility. If something is stolen or it dies, as long as the shomer chinam is not negligent and it just happened without, even though he was watching properly and was not negligent, it happened, then he does not have to pay, but he has to make a vow. Okay, so this shomer chinam has to make a vow. This is, everybody agrees that the Shomer Chinam has to make a vow. Rami Bar Chama's chidush is that Shomer Chinam only makes a vow if he is modeh b'miksat. So if it's just one item and he says, oh, it died, he doesn't have to make a vow. Only if there's several items, let's say three items, three cows, right? So now what would be the case where you'd have modeh b'miksat and kefirah b'miksat, and he's trying to get out of something because it was stolen or it died? Well, isn't it a case where at least one of them is as helach? Let's say the claimant says, I gave you three cows, where are they? And then the defendant, the shomer chinam, says, oh, you're right about one of them, here it is, right? And he gives back the cow, because it's right there, he gives the cow back. And he says, the other one, actually, you only gave me two in the first place, so he's denying that one altogether. And he says, oh, that third one that you're claiming, it died, or it was stolen. And so, in that case, that's when he has to make a vow. Now, here's the question. According to Rav Sheshet, since there is a helach, and he's giving it over, and he says, helach patur, because we take that off the table, and now he's actually denying everything. So how could Rav Sheshet explain this baraita that Rami Bar Chama is bringing? That's the question, and the answer is lo. Damar le shalosh parot masarti lecha umetu kuluhu bepishia. V'amar le ihu chada lo hayu devarim meolam. Chada meta beonis vechada meta bepishia. Deba'ena shalom elach delav helachu. No, in fact, we can explain this baraita without helach, where the claimant says, I gave you three cows and they must have all died because you're negligent, and even the shomer chinam is going to be liable when he's negligent. And the shomer chinam says, no, one of them you never gave me at all. You only gave me two to begin with. And one of them died beyond my control, so I'm not liable to that. That one will have to make a vow regarding. And the third one died and I was negligent. I admit to that one. Now here, the admission is not helach, it's dead. There's nothing that he can give over. So you can have a case of admission without helach. So he says, I'm going to pay you, right? And that's not helach. He's not giving the money right away. The item itself is not there. And so we can, even Rav Sheshet can explain this braita of Rami Bar Hama. All right, good. So now let's look at our list of things to do. We resolved two challenges against Rav Sheshet, and now we're going to have a challenge to Rabbi Chaya number one. From an explicit baraita, Rabbi Chaya number one says that if someone denies a claim entirely, but then two witnesses come and say, actually, you owe at least part of that claim, he does have to make a vow for the rest. So here's a baraita. Tashim hadetani abu de Rabbi aptoriki le de Rabbi Chaya kamaita. So here is a challenge from the father of Rabbi Aptoriki against Rabbi Chaya, the first law of Rabbi Chaya. Maneli biyadcha b'hala omed en lecha biyadi kilum. V'adim eidim oto sheyesh biyado 50 zuz, yachol yishaba al ha-sha'ar, tamud omar, al kol abeda asher yomar ki huze, al hoda'at pi v'ata mechayevo, v'yata mechayevo al Ha'adat Adim. Braita says, if one the claimant says, you owe me 100, and the other says, no, I don't owe you anything. And then witnesses come and say, actually, you do owe at least 50. Can it be that he would have to, the defendant would have to make a vow on the rest that he doesn't owe it? Right? Would we think that? That's actually what Rabbi Chaya says. But this Braita says, no, he does not have to make a vow because of that pasuk that we just quoted, regarding anything that is lost, and he says, Ki huze, oh, I owe you this amount, but not that amount. And that is asher yomar, that the defendant says. So that means only regarding it in the case of confession, he has to make a vow, but he does not have to make a vow if outside witnesses came and said so. This is a direct opposition to Rabbi Chaya. It's a total contradiction. So how are we going to get out of this one? And the answer is, Matita karamit aled Rabbi Chaya tanahu ufalig. What are you bringing, a baraita against Rabbi Chaya? Rabbi Chaya is a Tana. He is himself a Tana. He's a very early Amora / Tana. He's right on the borderline. And therefore, he himself is at that level that of authority of the Tanaim themselves, and so he argues on that he doesn't have to answer this answer to this baraita. All right, good. But v'hakira ka'amad, yeah. But the baraita quoted a pasuk, so even Rabbi Chaya cannot contradict a pasuk. So what are you going to say about what is he going to do with this pasuk from Shemot? And the answer is ahul v'demiksata ta'ana. Yes. He'll agree that pasuk is talking, is giving us the basic law that we need to know, that someone who admits to part of the claim has to make a vow. Rabbi Chaya agrees that's the basic law of modeh b'miksat. Rabbi Chaya happens to also think that, oh, if witnesses come, also you have to make a vow. So there's no contradiction to this pasuk. V'abud Rabbi ap toriki amar lach, ketib hu uchtiv ze. Chad modeh b'miksat ha-ta'ana, v'chad ha'da'at ha'edim de patur. So the father of Rabbi ap toriki would tell you, no, that this baraita, you have to agree with this baraita because the pasuk has two parts of it. It's two extra words. It says who, and it says ze, right? Ki hu ze. So these two words, each one has to teach you something different. One of them is teaching you regarding confession that you have to make a vow, and the other word is telling you that for witnesses come, that you don't have to, right? Ki hu ze. One is a limiting word. And therefore, one has to make a vow only when you confess. But when witnesses say that you owe part of it, then you do not confess. Ah, so that's how Rabbi Aptoriki understands that baraita, in which case this is a good proof. V'idach, so how will Rabbi Chaya take into account the extra two words of this pasuk? And they'll say, chad modeh miksat ha-ta'ana, v'chad modeh mimin ha-ta'ana. Says, I also learned different things from this pasuk. One is for the basic law that modeh b'miksat has to make a vow, and the other is that you only make a vow when the claim and the admission are of the same type. If someone says, you owe me apples, and I say, no, I don't owe you any apples, I owe you oranges, then there's no bodem b'miksat because that's not part of the claim. That's a different claim. It's a you're asking there the admission is of a different type of thing altogether. So okay, so now Rabbi Chiya has a good point. What is Rabbi Abtoriki going to say about that? V'idach modem b'mina ta'ana let lev esabar leker Rabban Gamliel ditnan ta'ano chitim v'hodah b'seorin patur v'Rabban Gamliel mechayev. Rabbi Abtoriki does not agree with that law altogether, and he agrees with Rabban Gamliel, and we see that this is a machloket in the Mishnah and Shavuot, that if someone claims you owe me wheat, and the other guy says, no, I owe you no wheat, but I do owe you barley, then he does not have to make a vow. That's the opinion of Rabbi Chiya and what he learns from it. But Rabban Gamliel says, you still have to make a vow. It doesn't matter if it's two different things. Still, there was a claim, and you admitted that you owe something, even if it's a different type of thing. You still have to make a vow, and therefore, Rabbi Abtoriki says, I don't need a pasuk regarding that, because it is liable, so I don't need a pasuk to exclude that. I use the pasuk instead to exclude the case of witnesses that say you have to pay part of it. And now, we get to the story. Hahura ayad havu masri le kol yomah chevata besahadeh. Yomah chad masru le belasahadeh. Lesof amar lehu lo hayu devarim me'olam. There was a shepherd, and people would give the shepherd their sheep to watch for the day. And they would give it to him with witnesses, so that witnesses would be there and says, yes, I saw, right, you owner gave the shepherd 10 sheep. Now, one day, there were no witnesses around, and so the owner nevertheless gave the shepherd 10 sheep. And at the end of the day, when the owner came to collect the sheep, the shepherd says, this never occurred. I never got any sheep from what sheep? I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know why I owe you anything. You didn't give me any. Okay, so now this is a big problem. But in the end, two witnesses came and they said, we saw the shepherd eat two of your sheep, right? We saw him there out in the field. He's barbecuing two of your sheep. And so surely he owes two of them. So now, this is not modeh b'miksat. The shepherd did not admit to anything, but rather this is Rabbi Chiya's case where he denies everything, but two witnesses come and say, well, you owe at least two. And therefore, according to Rabbi Chiya, he would have to make a vow for the rest of them that he doesn't owe the other eight, right? Because that's Rabbi Chiya, and that's what Rabbi Zera says. Amar Rabbi Zera imita the Rabbi Chiya kamaita mishtaba ashara. If we follow the first law of Rabbi Chiya, then he will have to make a vow regarding the other eight, even though he was not modeh b'miksat, he didn't admit to the two. But Rabbi Chiya says, even if you get based on witnesses say that you owe the other two, then that prompts, that triggers a vow, and the shepherd has to vow regarding the other eight. Okay, Amar le Abaye. Abaye says to Rabbi Zera, "Well, is that true? V'im ita mishteba? If we follow Rabbi Chiya, would he take a vow in this case? V'hagazlanhu? But this shepherd is a thief, right? Because the witnesses said you stole eight." Two of the two animals that were not yours. So how could we have him make a vow? Well, how are we going to believe a vow of someone who was just proven to be a thief? Amale she kenegdo kamina. So Rabbi Zera says, what I meant is that the other party, the owner, will make a vow. This is a general rule that if a defendant needs to make a vow, he's obligated to make a vow based on the rules of swearing. The Betin, according to Betin, has to make a vow, but he's not trustworthy because he's proven to be a thief. Then we issue the vow on the claimant instead. And you say, listen, he can't make a vow to defend himself. If you want the money, if you vow that you gave him all those 10 sheep, then he, in fact, will have to pay you. So that's what I meant. Even following Rabbi Chiya, since Rabbi Chiya says that you have to make a defendant have to make a vow when he denies all of it, but there are witnesses, and in this case, he can't make a vow because he's a thief, but so the owner who's claiming the 10 will have to make a vow, and he can make a vow and then collect. That's what I meant to say. We ask further, Hashtana me deleta l'Rabbi Chiya nechayeve me derav Nachman. But actually, even if we don't follow Rabbi Chiya, still the owner would have to make a vow, the shepherd, and then we'll transfer that to the owner based on a different vow. So you, in other words, we all agree that he has to make a vow, but not because of Rabbi Chiya. And so I don't agree with Rabbi Zera. Only if you follow Rabbi Chiya, then there has to be a vow. Even not this, because it's a different type of vow that Rav Nachman taught. Ditnan, maneli biadcha en lecha biyadi patur. V'amar Rav Nachman mashpirin oto shibu'at eset. If one person says, you owe me 100, and the other says, I don't know what you're talking about, I don't have anything, that I don't owe you anything. So then he does not have to pay. But Rav Nachman said that since someone came and made a claim in the first place, you know what? Better to clear your name. As a derabanan, clear your name and make an oath that you don't owe anything. It's not usual that people just go to make up a random claim and go to a person in the street and say, oh, you owe me $100 when there was nothing to, at all there, right? Usually there's some truth behind it. And so maybe he's right, maybe he's wrong. We're not going to make you pay just because someone claimed, but it's called Shibu'at Heset, to make a vow to clear your name. So even without a bichiyah, we would make a vow, we would have the shepherd make a vow. Now, this shepherd happens to be, he was just proven to be a thief. So we'll take that vow and we'll transfer it to the owner of the sheep instead, right? Make a vow. So we answer that Rav Nachman takanta he betakanta la takanta la abdina. No, we wouldn't apply Rav Nachman's vow here because Rav Nachman is only a takana of chachamim. And the idea that when a defendant cannot make a vow, then we transfer the vow to the plaintiff, that also itself is a takana. So we're not going to add an ordinance on top of another ordinance. So if it was just Rav Nachman's vow, shuvat hesed, we would not apply that to the plaintiff, and therefore the only vow that we would apply would be that of Rabbi Chiya. If we followed Rabbi Chiya, then this would be a deoraita vow, like Modeh B'Miksat is deoraita, and according to Rabbi Chiya, also this vow, if witnesses come, is a deoraita one, and that, since the shepherd cannot make that vow because he's not trustworthy, so then the plaintiff will make the vow. Now, here's a question. Why does it have to be in this case that because this shepherd was found to be a robber, because two witnesses say he was sitting there barbecuing and eating someone else's animals, that's why he can't make a vow? Is it really only that shepherd who's proven to be a thief that can't make a vow? Even without that, every shepherd is a vow, right? That's what is a thief. As Rav Yehuda said, a standard shepherd is a thief and cannot testify. It's disqualified from testifying in any case. Why? Because shepherds, usually, they have a lot of sheep and they walk around and they let their animals go and graze in other people's fields. They're not careful about it. And so, right, you have to presume that every shepherd is a thief and therefore no shepherd is qualified to be a witness or to make a vow. So how come you're saying, oh, in this case, because he's proven to be a robber, he can't make a vow, any shepherd cannot make a vow? And we answer, la kashya, hadide ha de alma, di ilate mahi, anan chevata ledoe hechi masrinan, vaketib lifne iver lotiten michshol, ela chazaka en adam hote velo lo. There's a difference between a shepherd who is shepherding his own animals and if he's shepherding someone else's animals. When Rav Yehuda said that every shepherd is disqualified, that's talking about a shepherd who's shepherding his own animals. Since it's his own animals, he stands to gain the fatter his animals get. And so he's going to be take chances and let his animals go and graze in other people's fields. And that's just, you know, like, you know, a standard procedure for shepherds. They're going to benefit from other people's fields, and they are thieves. However, if they're watching someone else's animals, that shepherd who's just for hire, he doesn't get paid any more if the animals are fat or and well fed or not. He just has to keep them alive, and so he's not going to go risk stealing and violate a sin. People will violate a sin of stealing if it's for personal benefit, but I'm not going to steal so that someone else should benefit. And that has to be the case, because if not, then how could any owner of sheep ever hire a shepherd to work for them? After all, the pasuk says, don't put a stumbling block before the blind. And if I have sheep and I know if I hire this person to watch my sheep, then he's going to steal, then I'm not allowed to give him my sheep to watch in the first place. So therefore, we do not say that. We assume chazaka, a person is not going to sin if he doesn't benefit from it. And so that's why we said in our case, this is someone who owns a sheep, giving it over to the shepherd. We assume that shepherd is not going to steal. and let them graze on other people's land. Now, this shepherd in particular, where there's witnesses that he actually was stole these animals and was barbecuing them, then he surely is not trustworthy. But otherwise, a shepherd who's watching sheep for someone else is not going to let them graze, because he's not going to sin when he doesn't benefit anyway, and that's why we can trust a standard shepherd. Zei Shabbat she'en lo ba pachot mechetzia. The Gemara is now going to clarify the vow that each of these parties takes, that they swear that they do not own less than half of it. Kind of confusing language, kind of double negative. En lo ba pachot, he doesn't have less than. So let's see what this really means. Al de'it le mishteba or al de'let le mishteba. Is he making a vow on what he has, meaning I have half? Or is he making a vow on the other half, that he doesn't own the whole thing, but only half? Amar Rav Huna, Rav Huna explains that the point of the Shavua is that he does have ownership of it, and that ownership is not less than half. But he does own, he definitely has ownership. So that explains this language, right? I own it and not less than half. Why doesn't he swear that the whole thing is his? After all, that's their claim. Both of them were coming in, holding on to this garment, and this one says, the whole thing is mine, so let him make a vow for the claim that he has. We say, are we giving him all of it? Why should he have to swear to the whole thing if he's only going to get half in the end anyway? Right? He could say, are you giving me the whole thing? No, so why should I swear to the whole thing? Why should I swear for more, about more than I'm actually getting in the verdict? So why doesn't he just make a plain swear that half of it is mine? What's with this whole roundabout language that not less than half is mine? And the answer is because that contradicts his claim. He claimed and says, I own the whole thing. So now he says, okay, swear that you own half. When you swear you own half, that sounds like I only own half. So now it sounds like he's admitting to a lie, but he doesn't think he's lying. And so he doesn't want to swear that he has only half. Hashtanami marat le dibure. Okay, but now anyway, looks like he is redacting his words by saying, I don't own less than half. He claimed that he has the whole thing, and now he is seems to be taking back, contradicting his original claim. And the answer is, damar kula sheli ulu divrechem, shewashi yesh liba, ve'en liba pachot mechesya. No, what he means to say, he doesn't actually say all these words, but the point of this language is, really, it's all mine. That's my claim. But according to you, who your verdict is going to be that I only get half, so you want me to swear on the amount that I'm going to take home, fine. So I'll make a swear that I have ownership in it, and I don't have less than half ownership in it. So that's the final vow, and this also helps because both of them can make a vow without either of them being obviously wrong, because it's possible that they both picked up at the same time, and therefore they both indeed do have half. And so we'd like to avoid a situation where there's two people making a vow in court, and one of them is clearly contradicting the other, so we're prompting a false vow, and this way we don't prompt a false vow, and necessarily prompt a false vow. And now we ask, why do we need this vow in the first place? Since we have two people standing there, this one is holding on to half of it, and the other one's holding on to half of it, and he's standing there, so why don't we just say, split it, and not make anyone take a vow? Rabbi Yochanan says, you're right. From the letter of the law, they could just split it. But the Chachamim came and made an ordinance that we should have such a vow, because we don't want people going and grabbing a garment of someone else and then saying, it's mine. If I see someone pick up a garment, I say, oh, that was a nice garment. Look how he found that. You know what? I would like that. And so I just grab the other side, knowing that if I go to court, they'll say I get half. Good. So I get half. So we want to refrain this behavior. So listen, we'll give you half, but you have to vow that you picked it up, that you claim that you picked it up first and it's all yours. Well, or that at least half of it is mine. Well, when it comes to a vow, then the person will say, you know what, I was lying, I'm not going to make a vow about that. And then he will refrain from grabbing it in the first place, knowing that if he comes to court, he's going to have to make a false vow. And even thieves don't want to make a false vow. Now we ask, V'nema migo de chashid amamona chashid name ashibwata. Now why do we make him take a vow? Why don't we say, since this person is suspect regarding money, regarding stealing, so then we should suspect him regarding taking a false oath anyway? That's what we think, right? He comes in and he's holding on to half of it. So is the other person holding on to half of it. And we don't just split it because we say, maybe he went and grabbed it second and tried to steal. So in order to make sure he's not a thief, let's make him make a vow. But if he's a thief and we suspect him of being a thief, then we should suspect that he would make a false oath. And therefore, making an oath shouldn't help. So why don't we say that logic? No, in fact, we do not make such a statement. We don't say, since we suspect him for money, we suspect him also to an oath. There are people, a lot of people, that may steal from someone else. They don't care about that. They justify it in some way. But when it comes to taking God's name in vain, that they would never do. That's bad luck. And they wouldn't do that. So these are very pious thieves and that they would not. So this is going to be the next subject that's going to go into the next daf. Do we say that someone who's suspected for stealing money is also suspected for taking a false vow? Yes or no? So right now we're saying no, not suspected. Why? Dilo temahachi, hayda amar hachamana mode miksata ta'ana yishaba, nem amigo de chashid amamona chashid ashebu'ata. And here's a proof that we don't make this migo argument. Because if you don't say that, the general rule of mode b'miksat, which is a Torah law, someone claims you owe me 100. The defendant says, I owe you 50, but not the other 50. So he admits to part of it. He has to make a vow. So we suspect, maybe you already admitted to 50. It sounds like there's some truth to that claim. We want you to make a swear on the other side, on the other part of it. So we're suspecting him of stealing the part that he is denying. And so we suspect him of stealing, but yet we make him take a vow. And if he makes a vow, then we believe him. So you see, this is a proof that we do not suspect a thief of taking a false vow. We answer, no, that is not a good proof. Because it could be that this defendant is just trying to buy time, right? He is planning to pay the whole thing, but he only has $50 now. And so he wants to wait, until the next paycheck, and then he'll be able to pay the rest. But if he admits to everything now, then he's going to take him to court and have to pay everything now, and he doesn't have it. So he's not actually a thief. He's justifying the lie. He's justifying the lie to buy more time. That's why we make him take a vow, because he's actually not a thief. He's an honest person, and therefore, once we impose a vow, he'll say, "Okay, you know what? I confess. I really do owe the whole thing, right? But I just don't have the money now. So this is not a good proof." Teda, and now we're going to prove this point of Rabba. Damar Rav Idi bar Avin Amar Rav Chista Hakofer b'Milveh Kasher La'Edut b'Pikadon Pasul La'Edut. After all, Rav Chista says that someone who denies a loan, he owes a loan, he still can be a witness afterwards, even though someone came and said, "You owe me $100. He said, "I don't owe you. I don't owe you anything. I don't know what you're talking about." And afterwards, witnesses come and say, and find he's found to be false. Nevertheless, we don't consider him a rasha. Why? Because we say, maybe he was denying the loan because he was trying to buy time. He wasn't really actually stealing. So therefore, he is still trustworthy for testimony. Not so regarding a deposit. If someone owns a cow and he gives his neighbor the cow to watch for him, and then he comes and says, "Okay, where's the cow? I want it back." And the neighbor, the watchman, says, "I don't have any cow. There was never a cow. You never gave me anything. I don't owe you a cow. I already returned it to you." He's found out to be lying. Witnesses come and say, in fact, he did have the cow and did not return it. Then he will not. He'll be disqualified from being a witness, and also disqualified from taking a vow. The reason here is because he's not buying time. Either he has the cow or he doesn't. If he has the cow, then he should have it in his barn, and he should be able to give it right away. It's different from money. If I give you money as a loan, then I expected that you're going to spend it, and then you might not have it on hand, so you might be buying time. But if he gives something to watch, you're supposed to be watching it in your house. You shouldn't be using it, taking it anywhere else. It should be there. And if if you say it's not there, then that means you're trying to steal it. Since you're a thief, then you're not reliable to give testimony. And so if one's suspected of a thief, then he cannot be relied upon to take an oath that he is not lying. Okay. Ela ha detani rami bar chama. But now we have a challenge on this distinction between Rav Chisda, that he says, "Bepikadon pasula edut," because of this statement that we already saw. Arba'a shomrin sirichin kefira b'miksat v'odah b'miksat. Shomer chinam v'ashoel nose sachar v'hasocher. Nema migud echashid amamona, chashid name, chashid ashebu ata. Well, Rami Bar Chama says that all the types of shomrim, only if there is a denial and also an admission, then they have to make a vow of a modeh b'miksat. And it lists all the types of watchmen. We already explained that this case is talking about where the owner of cows says, "I gave you 3 cows to watch." The watchman said, "No, first of all, you only gave me 2. So that's a denial. And one of them, you're right, I do owe you. That's an admission. And the third one, let's say he's a shomer chinam, and he says it was stolen or lost. And I was not negligent. So therefore I don't have to pay." And so he'll have to make a vow on that. Now, in that case, why don't we say that's a picadon, right? That's an item. So how come we don't say, since he's suspected regarding the money, we should suspect him regarding a vow, since either he has it or doesn't. And so if he's found out to be lying, meaning we suspect him that he's lying. We suspect that, in fact, he was negligent. And that's why it got stolen or lost. And so if we're suspecting him of stealing something, then we should not believe his oath either. So how come he says you make an oath? That seems to go against Rav Chisda, that pasul edut in a pikadon. And the answer is, hatam nami ishtamute kamishtamet. In that old case also, he could be buying time. Sabar mashkachna le'algana v'tafisna le'iname mashkachna le'be'agam u'maitina le'. The watchman is thinking, listen, I'm lying. I really don't have it. And in fact, I was negligent. I wasn't watching it. And it got stolen or lost. But he's thinking to himself, I'm not going to just steal it and not never pay him. I'm hoping that I can find the thief. I think I have a lead. Maybe I'll find him. Or I'll go to the marsh. That's where they usually get lost. And I'll find it if it was lost. I know it's true I was negligent. If I don't find it, I'll pay him. But in the meantime, I'm just telling him that it was lost. It's not my fault. Because if I admit that it was my fault, then I'll have to pay. But I really still think I can get it back. So therefore, he is not a thief. And that's why he is believed to make a vow. Okay, once you give that answer, then go back to Rav Chisda. Why did Rav Chisda say that someone who denies regarding a deposit is no good? Why don't we say in any case like that, that he's thinking, listen, I don't have it. He's thinking to himself, I don't have it. But, you know, maybe I'll go find it. Maybe I'll get it. Maybe I'll find it somehow. And so he's not really a liar. He's not really a thief. And therefore, that's why he's believed. He's thinking to himself, oh, I'll just evade and I'll buy time. In the meantime, I'll look for it and hopefully I'll be able to find it. So we should believe a vow for someone who denies that he has to give an item back to the owner and he's found to be a liar. Why does Rav Chisda make such a distinction? And the answer is kamina kofer pikadon pasul la'edut kigon da'atu sa'adeh v'asidu be de'ahi sha'ata yiteh l'pikadon v'beteh v'hava yada inameh. When Rav Chisda here made his law and said, when someone is found to be a liar regarding a deposit that he has, that was only in a case where 2 witnesses come and say, at that very moment, they testify that this watchman has it in his house, and he knew that it was there. We saw him just, feed the animal, and so he definitely knows it's there. And the fact when he comes and says, oh, I don't have your animal, he is clearly lying and trying to steal. That's the case. What we say, no, even if you make a vow, where if, from now on you're pasula adut, because now you're proven to be a rasha, and so that's the kind of person that becomes untrustworthy, or that we see he has it in his hand, he actually has it, and he at that time he's kind of hiding it behind his back, is in his pocket, he has it with him, so we know that he's not buying time, and therefore he is clearly a thief, and therefore will not be believed anymore. What about the case of Rav Huna, who says, let's say there's a watchman, and the watchman gets a cow, and then he says, the owner says, where's the cow? He says, oh, it was stolen. I was not negligent. He says, okay, make a vow, and then you won't have to pay. But this, let's say Shomer Chinam, he says, listen, I don't want to make a vow. I just don't like making vows. I'll pay you. Right, I don't mind. I'll pay you, even though it's not my fault. I'd rather pay. In that case, he still has to make a vow that he doesn't have it in his possession. Right, he doesn't have to make a vow about the what happened, that he was not negligent and all that. Even though he's paying, still we suspect that maybe he's paying, but he actually is keeping the item. Maybe he really likes this cow, and he says, you know, I'll pay for it so I can keep the cow. So in that case, why don't we say, since he is suspect of stealing the cow, he would be suspect of taking a vow, and he shouldn't have to take a vow either. Why don't we apply that rule? And the answer is, no, the person could rationalize. It could be he really is keeping, he has the cow and he's keeping it for itself. Basically, he is stealing it. But he doesn't think he's stealing because he says, well, I'm paying for it. Right? So so it's okay. And since he doesn't think he's stealing, so he's a credible person. Right? He's honest. At least in his own head, he's honest. And that's why we believe him if he makes a vow and says, it's not, we want to discourage that. So that's why we make him take a vow in the first place. We want to make sure he's not thinking that he can keep it and just pay for it. So that's why we make him take a vow. And we believe his vow because it could be that he's an honest person. He's not actually trying to steal it. In his mind, he thinks he's just trying to buy it, but tricking the owner into buying it by lying and saying that he doesn't have it. So that's why we do believe him.
Rav Acha says, Ravina, but how could you make him take a vow? He's a rasha in that he's violating the law of do not covet.
He saw this friend's cow, and he see who that he's watching. Now that the cow's in his house, he says, oh, what a beautiful cow. I really want it for myself. I know I'll lie and say it was lost, and I'll pay for it. So even though he thinks that's not stealing, but still, certainly he's violating law tahmod, and therefore he should not be believed when to take a vow that it's not in his possession. And the answer is, lo tachmod li nashe belo dame mashma lehu. No, most people think that lo tachmod only means if I try to take something without paying. I try to take something that I'm jealous that my neighbor has. But people think wrongly that if I pay for it, then I don't violate lo tachmod. And so that's what this guy thinks. He's a watchman. He has his cow. He wants to keep it. And so he would lie and say that it's not here. And he thinks he's not buying lo tachmod because he's paying for it. So he thinks he's an honest person and he's totally okay. So that person, because at least in his own mind, he's honest and didn't do anything wrong, still we would believe him if he takes a vow to say it's not in my possession, right? Because we don't suspect that he would, in addition to keeping it and violating lo tachmod, in his own mind, he thinks he's doing everything right. So he thinks he's an honest person. So he may justify keeping the item and paying for it. But if you ask him to make a vow, he would say, oh, take a vow that it's not in my house. I'm not going to lie under oath about it. And then he would admit. And that's why we believe him. But otherwise, you're right. If he was a total thief, then he would not be believed to take a vow. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen v'amen.